You're listening to Podium Podcast with former England rugby player Tom May and leading performance coach Simon Hartley. From locker room gossip to fascinating high-performance insights, this is the show that invites some of the biggest names in the world of sport to discuss life on and off the field of play. Podium Podcast is brought to you by True Potential. To find out more, visit www.tpllp.com.
Simon, we're back. I'm in an office and you're in your new house and you haven't quite put your clothes peg up yet, so you can get your shirts up.
I know. It's looking a bit bare in here, to be honest. But yeah, new house, new Wi-Fi, which you'll be pleased to know.
It might make a difference. Let's find out. It's good to be back on this and I'm really looking forward to this. I've met this guy, Jamie Jones Buchanan, a couple of times. I know you know him quite well.
Yeah.
He has got energy to burn, right?
He's got energy to burn. He's a really, really sharp guy as well. And I mean, his playing career speaks for itself, but
I can't get my head around 420 games.
No, I know. I mean, he's put his body through the mill, but he's one of those people. He's a really, really well-educated, very, very smart bloke. And I'm really looking forward to what he's got to say.
Well, he was part of that golden generation. Kevin Sinfield, Danny Maguire, Rob Burrow, Ryan Bailey, like the names in that team.
Absolutely.
I know. I'll touch on it in a sec, how much he's won, but he's not shy of a bit of silverware.
Absolutely. No, and he's earned every bit of it.
Let's get going. Jamie, how are you?
I'm good. I'm thriving. I've got a mate of mine. I ask him the same question and he goes, if I was any better, I don't think I'd be able to cope. So, I'm bloody marvellous, and I always take inspiration from that. So,
yeah, love it.
I'm good.
That's a great intro. I love it. Now, I'm going to read out some stats here. Correct me if any of them are wrong. Jamie Jones Buchanan, 7 Super League Grand Final wins, 3 World Cup Challenge wins, 3 League Leader Shields, 1 Challenge Cup Final, played for England and Great Britain, and 420 plus professional games.
Yeah, that's about right. Yeah, bang on.
I felt pretty sore and pretty old at times, having reached 380. So talk to me about 420. How's that body?
Yeah, good, actually. I mean, obviously, it takes its toll, and I always use the analogy of my fingers. These fingers are empty. And a lot of my joints and bits of my body are like that, like big twiglets. And when I retired, I was in all kinds of pain for about, 6 months, a year. And I let myself go a little bit. I'd fought the good fight, run the race and kept the faith. And now that I was approaching 40, I could be like Homer Simpson and let the dad bod go and the rest of it. And then, funnily enough, just before lockdown, I started running with my wife. And then that was the only thing we were allowed to do. And it gripped me. And we were doing 10K, really steady, 3 times a week. And it become like, instead of a date night, it become like a date morning, like this really conducive and emotive hour that I spent with my wife Monday, Wednesday, Friday mornings. And it was brilliant. And I ended up losing about 2 stone and got right into it. And now, mate, you know, when I come back into my career and people were saying, oh, don't ever run on road, it'll do your knees, your back, and run on grass. It was like a myth. And I thought, no, I run maybe 35, 40 plus miles a week now, and my joints and bones and body's never felt better. So human body's got an amazing ability to regenerate and recuperate. So I'm in good nick for a 41-year-old.
I watched the documentary on Sky the other day around Kevin Sinfield's ultras, and I saw you tagging along. So did you do all of the ultras? Did you do some of them?
So we made that. I've got a small production company called Ram Films, and we made that. So we've tagged along with Kev for the last 3 years doing all his various challenges. And he's always invited me along to do one. The first year, he did 7 marathons in under 4 hours in the 7 days. And that was my first real marathon. And we had to do it in under 4 hours. And I was scared to death that I'd be the one that let him down. And he managed to get me around in 3 hours, 52 minutes. I remember my mum, she rung me and I said, oh, mum, I've finished. I've got it done. I've done it. First marathon. And she went, yeah, I've just seen time. It was slowest one in week, wasn't it? I'm like, instead of going, congratulations. But in this ultra, I did the York to Bradford leg. and obviously come through via Leeds to see Rob. And it was, thankfully, the shortest day, 35 mile, and it was the best weather. So I did do that with him, and it was at a pace that was manageable. But he'd already done, what, five already, and he still had one more to do after. So he's a phenomenal human being, is Kev, full of resilience and fortitude.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that stands out about rugby league players to me, and this is coming from Rugby Union, is your levels of fitness. I hated long distance running when I was playing, and I've sort of, a bit like you, got into sort of 10Ks. I'm now trying to get under 20 minutes for a 5K this year. Do you find that running is one of those ways where you still get the buzz that you used to get from playing? I find it's the quickest way to get my heart rate up, and actually it's the quickest way to get something done and bin it off, and I've done my sort of physical exercise for the day. Did you get that same sort of buzz from running?
So it's a great question. So no, it really replaces the game of rugby league. I'll say I don't miss it at all, by the way. You know, 421 games, it's all about the size of the fight and the dog. And I was always a very small forward. And I gave everything that I had to those years and every single one of those games. And when I finished, that's my race done. And I very much wanted to redefine myself in a new chapter. But what I found with the running is I hated, like yourself, running for the sake of running long distances. I just wanted to get somewhere quicker. But it's become more than that. It's almost spiritual now. It's therapeutic mentally as much as it is physically. And I went right down to about 6.5% body fat, which was phenomenal. I really started to learn things about my body that, even though I'd had 22 years as a professional sportsman, I never even knew. And I thought, wow, I wish I knew them what I know now. You know the old saying. But even better than that, you know, you might read books about things like journaling, you know, the Stoics or people who meditate. For me, getting up at 5:15 every day and then finding myself on the road in the village that I grew up, you know, the area that I grew up, is not just nostalgic and gives me great memories, but it gives me oxygen to the brain, which informs what I want to do for the rest of the day, because it's when I feel the most creative. And there's a therapeutic, almost meditative aspect to it, in the just the bam, 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 bam. And being present, you know, people talk a lot about at the minute, being in the moment, being present with myself, with my thoughts. And also the ability to compound that time with an audiobook, for example, you know, and listen. And I hadn't done it recently, but I started reading books and listening to the same book whilst I was running. And you'd, for example, be on chapter 5 on the canal, listening to it. And then when you read chapter 5 in the house, you get this real vivid sight of the canal and remember exactly what that part of the book was about. So you're almost like attacking it two-pronged, akimbo, and it just helps you to memorise some of that content as well. So the whole aspect of running become an augmentation, if you like. There's some really important habits and rituals that I've found really help me post-career and are helping me in my own personal development.
I was going to ask, I'm one of those runners. I cannot run without headphones. If I hear myself breathing out my ass, I'm struggling. And that, there's nothing worse, is there? Because then actually it reinforces in your head. You're like, oh, I really am tired here. So do you, you mentioned that meditative state that you can get into when you're running. You obviously started without headphones, did you? But then it progressed to doing it with audiobooks and stuff?
Yeah, so it started with my wife, and my wife was my joy. My wife's my best mate. We met when I was 14. We've got four boys. I'm 41 year old now, and she literally is my best friend. She's got loads of banter. She's funny. We've been on a lot of journeys together, overcome a lot of obstacles, and that time running with Emma was just a time to chat about things as mundane as, you know, what the kids need, what project we're going to do in house next, what colour next walls are going to be. And I really enjoyed that. And then when it became a bit more about performance, and I literally run every day now, pretty much. I reckon in the last 60 days, I bet I've run 53. Been a few days when I haven't done. Obviously, she didn't want to get up and do that every day. So I've started being on my own. And there's two sides to it. I do find it okay, actually. I'm all right running with just myself, with no headphones in. And the reason being is because I'm still there with my thoughts and that rhythm. And quite often the thoughts can be quite deep. And again, being able to, I don't like going with this, some of this contemporary language in terms of like being with a moment. But when I said I'm running around the same streets that I grew up in, I live about 100 metres away from the house that I lived in when I signed for Leeds as 15. So I'm literally in the very epicentre of where I grew up. So when I'm running past houses, it gives me some real nice memories. You know, people that live there, still live there, people that I know, my family, majority of my family's there. So when I'm running through Bramley in West Leeds, it's really nostalgic for me. And then I like to run into the centre of Leeds as well, which is another place that I love. And I run up Briggate recently, and just looking at what's on the floor, what plants have been planted, different types of houses. You know, I'm doing a bit of building work on my house at the minute. I'm fascinated with it. And the other thing about running is, if it doesn't matter whether you're in Bramley, New York, I was in Ilkley recently, London. If you get up at 5:15 and you're running out of streets, you're seeing an empty environment, right? And it's the best way to understand and see a city for what it is before all the hustle and bustle and noise starts. I went to Reykjavik in Iceland, and I remember Googling it thinking, I'm going out on my own here in a country and a city that I've never been in. Now, is it even safe? And I Googled it, and it was indexed the number one safest place on the planet. And I thought, this is good, and I'm going to enjoy this. Now, it's volcanic. There's nobody there anyway. I don't know who's going to get me if the boat did. But it was amazing. And again, it was just that hour on my own in a different, unique environment.
Absolutely love Reykjavik. I think that might be my favourite city on earth, actually.
I've never been. I've heard a lot about it. I've heard it's really expensive.
Yeah, oh dear. I mean, I went to New York for New Year. And that was almost incidental. I mean, unbelievable place. Every bit as glamorous as you'd expect. But the fact that I was there with my wife, first time we'd been away since my children were born, without the kids. So, you know, that's sort of since 2006, first time we've been away together on our own. You know, it was like being a teenager again. So that was amazing. And you think all kinds of things running around. I'm going to New York at 5 on my own. I'm not going to come back alive. But there must have been 300 people out on cycles and bikes and running at race.
Brilliant.
We hope you don't mind us interrupting the show with a very short message about our partners at the Podium Podcast, True Potential. True Potential provide wealth management that's simple, effective, and unique. Their expert advice, innovative investments, leading technology, and dedicated support are all designed to help you do more with your money. Visit www.tpllp.com now to find out more. Capital at risk. True Potential Wealth Management and True Potential Investments are authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. Thanks for listening. Now, let's get you back to this week's show.
Jamie, you talk about signing on as a professional player at 15.
Yeah.
First question I'd ask you now is, do you advise that of young 15-year-olds in today's environment? And also, because you've been in the game for so long, look, to play 421 professional games, you're definitely going to have been around the block. How then did you sort of decamp from professional sport and find that transition into turning into dad bod, for example? How was that sort of transition in your mind? Did you find it easy?
Yeah, I did. And I think one of the reasons being is because I've always had fingers in different pies. I was never particularly idolatrous about the game of rugby league. And I'll use a contrast of Kevin Sinfield, who's one of my best mates. He put everything into rugby league, right? And he was the most methodical, disciplined, process human being I've ever met, to a point where I've never seen anybody as committed or as sacrificial to a cause as that fella is, you know. 2015, BBC Sports Personality Year runner-up. And AP McCoy got a Lifetime Achievement Award, and they asked him what advice would you give to young people, and he said, make the sacrifice because it's worth it. And I'm thinking, it's a brilliant bit of advice, and I'm looking at Kev thinking, I can't imagine there's anybody as good as all these sports people are in this room this building, or even watching a programme that's made the sacrifices and the commitments that he's had. And look, he gets the fruits of his labour because of that now. But for me, I was very much a person who was interested in science, and I was interested in keeping tropical fish. I was interested in fishing, being around with my mates, architecture, housing, investments. I've always had a finger in a lot of proverbial pies. I, whatever talents I had, I tried to give them as well. So I spent a lot of time coaching, and when I could do my charity work, I did that. As I got a bit older and learned, I started speaking and talking about my journeys and what I call inspire, educate, and entertain those people within my community, and try my best to give back for the grace of opportunity that I was given. Whatever chance I had to pay that forward to the next generation, then I'd do that. And that lent itself to me travelling length and breadth of the country, either speaking, doing punditry, all kinds of stuff in and around sport, so that when I retired at the ripe old age of 37, there were so many opportunities and sort of anecdotal skills that I'd acquired. Not many qualifications. I did a degree at Leeds Beckett, so I'd had a degree inside of my name, but I couldn't sort of retire and go, well, I'm qualified at this job. I had to almost start all over again and almost be like a 16, 17-year-old. But to use that phrase again, knowing, I wish I knew then what I know now. I did know now what I know now, so I could apply that to that next chapter. And so, I went into coaching. I had a two-year part-time contract with Sky. I was on Sky last night, punditry. Started working with a financial consultancy firm called Sedulo, where we do days. And then this idea of surrounding yourself with great people means that when the tide rises, all boats go with it. And I was just so fortunate to be surrounded by some amazing human beings who took me on that journey as well. So I was really fortunate, because by applying myself to different things outside of rugby whilst playing rugby, it lent itself to me, you know, almost upskilling my abilities for when I finish playing. Whereas some people finish, they've not invested that time and energy into different things, and then they find it really hard to let go.
Because you've got a really unique role now. You're looking after culture within the club. You're looking after equality and diversity and inclusion within the club. And whilst these roles exist in business quite commonly, I'm not aware of that many that exist in sports clubs. You'll have learnt stuff from your playing career, but like you said, you've learnt a hell of a lot from your experience outside of playing the game. What do you now use within the role that you've got?
Use my experience and my passion. You know, I talked about my great sense of gratitude for opportunity that I was given, ultimately to fulfil my bad dreams. You know, I wanted to be a professional sportsman. When I went and watched Leeds Rhinos and ex-Leeds players as a nine-year-old outside the pitch there, inspired me as to who and what I wanted to be, and I became that. You know, a lot of them accolades that you reeled off at the start, I've got them under my bed, in my drawers, on the walls, but they almost become incidental. You forget about the big games and the accolades, and I've got one on now as a bit of a reminder, my first one, 2004, and it's lovely, and it means something to me, but a lot of people have long since forgotten that. The treasure is in the people that I went on that journey with, my teammates, and they're still friends. I don't remember much about 2004 as a game, the game plan, what we tried to do, why we wanted to do it, but I'll remember all the people that I played alongside, probably for as long as I live. That really roots itself deep into your psyche. And there was a lot of grace shown by them, and we'd be lifelong friends. So what I use now is that passion to pay that gift forward, and I see it as a gift. And to help other people understand that, there's nothing we can't achieve or overcome when we do it together. So what is Leeds Rhinos other than it's a brand that through sport brings people together, and our motto is to change lives through sport. Now, when I signed for Leeds, there was one men's team, and it was fed by an academy team and a reserve, so it was a men's, and it had a couple of games on a fortnight. Now we've got a men's, a women's, a wheelchair, learning disability rugby league, physical disability rugby league. We've even got a netball team, so we've transcended the sport of rugby league, and the banner of the Leeds Rhinos is over the top of multiple sports, and each one of those sports has a different individual from a different background, different gender. We had two lads from Rhino's first team who fasted through all that last game because it was Ramadan, but people of different religions, all kinds of diverse bits of life all come together under that brand. And it's such a mosaic. It's so colourful. And it's unbelievable. And that helps us to grow exponentially by learning and giving to one another. So in my role, actually, you know, people go, oh, it's quite new and you must have a lot of work to do. Well, actually, a lot of it's already been done. You know, Gary Edenton and the people that have been involved with Leeds and how it's evolved over the last 27 years have provided an environment that's allowed everybody to thrive, or most people to thrive. What I probably need to do now, as I see it, is to A, make sure everybody's happy, safe, and it's inclusive in the sense that we're all aiming to get everybody on the level playing field. The men's team's 125 years older than the women's team, so there's going to be a disparity, but we need to get the women's up to speed as quick as we can, as we do with wheelchair, taking advantage at recent World Cup and how everybody's blown away by wheelchair rugby league, making sure that we the tide just keeps on rising. We also need to tell the story better. One of the problems that we've got in rugby league and we're guilty of is that there's a lot of humility and they're very humble and don't want to shout from rooftops. And it's not about being boastful or arrogant. It's about saying, this is what we're trying to do. This is what we are doing because we want to be better and we want to keep getting better. And it's not a race to the bottom. You know, it's a race to be best versions of ourselves, to collectively be the best club that we can be and to keep driving that up. And the reason why it's important is because other people see that then as an example and hopefully follow that trend. So, you know, the beacon of light that Leeds Rhinos is needs to be a beacon of light for Super League and sport in general.
You talked about having a lot of fingers in a lot of pies while you're playing.
Yeah.
And not being a thing when you finished. I felt that quite profoundly when I finished playing. I wasn't qualified to do something. And it took me a lot of time to get comfortable with that. Do you think the skills you learned by having your fingers in different pies actually plays really nicely into the role you've got now? Because actually you're trying to bring everything together. And really, it's a case of managing those relationships, which you've had to do over, you know, 421 games.
Well, I think one of my traits, my individual traits, regardless of what I'm qualified to do now, is that I've always been a people person. I love human beings. I feel like I've always been relatively emotionally intelligent, so I can see people. I'm empathetic with them, and I love being around them. I believe we're all made in God's image. You know, I'm a Christian. I read the Bible every day. I think it's the blueprint. It's the primary colours through which everybody else paints different pictures. But we're all made in God's image, which means we've got something unique and special to give to the world. Now, what we need, though, is an opportunity to be able to do that. And you'll both know, and science will tell you that there's a few really important things that human beings need. And one of them is a sense of belonging. So you want to belong to a tribe, a company, a team, a church, a classroom. And then you want to be able to manifest your gift, your identity within that. So within that tribe, that community, you want to be able to give to other people. And when you can bestow upon others something that you're good at, I don't think there's a better virtue for human beings. I think that's the deepest quality in life for me. So again, I'm looking around at different people, what their talents, skills and abilities are, and thinking, right, well, how can they come together under the banner of the Leeds Rhinos so that they feel valued and they feel like they've got a belonging within our tribe?
Mm, that when I look at some of the teams that you were part of, particularly that sort of treble winning team, it really looked like you had a close-knit group, really close-knit group, massive sense of belonging. Everybody was fully invested into what you were trying to do. Everybody had a role to play and they fitted. It looked like that from the outside. Was that how it felt from the inside? And is that something that you could draw on now in your current role?
Yeah, it is. And I think I only recognise that retrospectively, if I'm honest with you. So one thing that was really important when I did retire, and I'm making it sound like it was all fairly rosy and I was well equipped through experience. One of the mistakes I did make was that I didn't have enough conviction about what I wanted to do next or where I wanted to go. Because I'd fulfilled this borrowed dream, it was a bit like, how good is this? Life's going to transition into a new chapter and the tide will take me wherever it wants. But there's that Seneca quote that a mate of mine, Mike Bates, said, you know, he said, no wind is advantageous unless you know which port you're sailing to. You've got to have a destination or a direction. You've got to point a compass somewhere. And what was happening was, you know, this old saying that Kev again used to say, if you work hard and do the right thing, good things will happen. And there were, like, life was unreal. I'm like, that's great. That's brilliant. That's progressed. But because I'd not set any of them down as a goal or a destination, when it happened, it felt like an accident, a fortuitous accident, you know, something that I was lucky. And that, for some reason, doesn't install the same sense of satisfaction or achievement. So I had to really start thinking about, well, actually, where am I going? Who do I want to take with me? And what do I want to be a part of? To go back to what you were saying about the team, we get attributed for being golden decade, golden generation. But what a lot of people forget really quickly, looking or being blinded, blinkered by the success, is that we started winning in 2004, but actually we started coming through in about 99. So it was like 5 years worth of struggle, triumph and disaster, to quote Rudyard Kipling. Treating those two imposters just the same in that, whether you win or lose on a Friday night isn't as important as how you get out of bed on a Saturday morning and use either experience. You've just got to keep learning from that experience the day before and try to improve just incrementally and as a group. So there's that, what Kev calls congruency within that team, to a point where you start to see visual cues, understand vocabulary. You can sense and feel and see and hear when people are good, when they're not so well, and manage that, mitigate it, steer it. And that boils right down on the field. When Rob Burrow starts to run sideways, I know intuitively where it's going to end up and how I need to react off the back of it. And you get this real synergy to the point where the game plan almost becomes irrelevant. So you just pick one out of a hat, and we've got that much mental fortitude, resilience and prior know-how that we can pretty much adapt to most situations. But again, it's an important point, Simon, because nobody was asking us to reflect on that or measure that. And we never talked about it. It was just there. And it wasn't until it disappeared, till we retired, that you think, wow, that was important. And you almost expect, another thing that I think the club did really badly, and I learned a big lesson from, is that succession never happened either. So you basically have all this generation of players retire. A lot falls off a cliff. And, you know, the bar in 2017, which was the last time we've won a grand final, that next generation never picked it up and took it on because they didn't have that. We didn't allow them that time and that environment for them to be join on to that, if you don't understand what I'm saying. So this nucleus, that is Kevin Sinfield, and this generation of about five or six people around which it all revolved, disappeared, and then all protons and electrons just flow off.
Thanks for listening to this week's Podium Podcast, part one of this two-parter with Leeds Rhino legend Jamie Jones Buchanan. Tune in next week to find out more about Jamie's time in one of rugby league's most successful club teams, playing with some of the game's most iconic names, and how he's transitioned to a groundbreaking new role as head of culture and diversity in his hometown club. Thanks for listening.